lot of things on the agenda, so we'd like to see her early. I'm our back, I'm our facilitators, the advisors, so I want to welcome all of you here. Just, you know, we want to see that, so the advisor, you will put the lot going out and introduce yourself. Ron Atkinson, partner of the Davis Brothers Family Business.
I am a board member from the Pride Metro Safety Coalition and an architect and designer in Florida.
Matthew Smith, I'm a law firm, okay.
William Zeller, some of the Pride Boss, everyone on our board.
Bill Crowley, lifetime resident, local building.
I'm a local resident, Paul.
Jasmine Sherrod Blue, I'm an at-large member as well. I live on Fayette Street.
Jimmy Norton, I'm a resident of the Citizens Coalition.
Hi, board, I'm representing Westwell House.
This is a little housekeeping, I was talking to Nate about this. And actually, it turns out that Jesse reminds firms as facilitators about going. So we have to do that, that you have people raising, and he wants to do it. Then everybody would rather than make some judgments. Go ahead, and if you're interested in going forward as a facilitator, I think it's not that hard to staff up to it. Go ahead and forward either your name, or if you want to nominate somebody else, send it over to Nathan. And you can go ahead and, you know, make a decision if you need to use it. That's okay with everybody. All right, so our first item tonight is an on-off presentation on the Andrew Atkins redevelopment. So Lori, if you have anything to do with this article, that would be great.
Good evening. Good evening. I'm Lori Preach, I'm the CEO of the Alexander Redevelopment and Housing Authority. I wanted to give a very brief overview before I introduce the team that's going to do the presentation today. Many of you all, all of you all know that AHA started in about February of 2015 with a process to select developers for five of our redevelopment sites. And those five sites were Andrew Atkins, Samuel Madden, our AHA administration building, Hopkins Council, and Cameron Valley. And as we've gone through the process of looking at and selecting developers for the specific development sites, we at the board have decided we wanted to proceed with the redevelopment first of the Atkins project. And so that's what we're going to present to you tonight, is the first of two sites in the Braddock East area. And I'm going to introduce, the team to introduce themselves. I'm going to ask Casey to come up and introduce the team for the Atkins site. We have four major partners that are part of the redevelopment process, and they're going to give you a presentation tonight. I will interject myself where necessary, talking about maybe things around relocation, but other than that, they will be doing the presentation. Jonathan Black, who many of you all know, is a land attorney in the city, done a lot of great projects, is the principal coordinator of the team working with the city. And we want to thank very much the planning and zoning staff and others we've been working with, because we're on a very accelerated schedule to try to get this project through the entitlement process by November, no later than December of this year, in order to be able to apply for a tax credit for this project in March 2018 funding round. That's our goal. Casey, let me turn it over to you.
Great, thank you, Mr. Bruce.
Talk about process and engagement in next steps. So in terms of who we are, I've been with the Clark organization for almost 20 years. CRC was founded out of Clark Construction about 24 years ago. So if you've been in the Washington area, you see quite a lot of blue signs. We're the development and investment side of the organization. We're based in Arlington, Virginia. And the roots of our company started in affordable housing. So we've done a number of life tech projects in the greater Washington area. We've done mixed-use multifamily projects, a lot of stuff with the military, just like workforce housing. And our construction company has built much of the Potomac Yard apartments. And so we have a history of executing turnkey development throughout the Washington, D.C. area. VHDC, Connie will be here, of course you could be here tonight, and they're our partner in this. So you're very familiar with the stuff that RI's done in the past, and we're excited to kind of build on the lessons learned and successes they've had to help make the interactive development successful. Gina?
I'm Gina Merritt. My company is Morgan Real Estate Urban Ventures, and I actually started my career at CRC managing some of their first affordable housing projects. A couple years later, I then went out on my own and started doing development consulting for nonprofits and actually cities all across the country. Right now, we are managing about 3,000 units of affordable housing. It's about $2 billion worth of development. My colleague David Davenport in the back is actually managing $100 million of construction in the district. And we advise on projects, again, all over the country. We work right now in Hawaii and in Atlanta. And part of what I bring to the table, my firm, is overseeing the affordable housing financing plan, as well as community engagement and jobs outreach. Thank you.
And I'll speak to Lisa, since he's going to have the floor, about design. Many of you know Lee, Alexandria native. Connie Gilman, a ton of stuff in Alexandria, and the CRC team and Lee's firm have worked together and collaborated on other projects. And we've been working on the RFP and this process for a while. It's been great working with Lee and his team. I'll set the table in terms of where the site is, get some context, and again, if we want to get through this so we can hear people. This is the site. The Braddock Metro right here. Existing Andrew Atkins homes are right here. And this piece right here is what we call the West Street Assemblage. So you may be familiar, there's some single family homes fronting the metro here. We are a contract purchaser on those homes and have put together preliminary ideas to see a plan that really kind of weaves this whole site together by utilizing the site right across the metro. Everybody always asks the question, so I'll just try to head it off. What's going on with this piece right here? It's not the lack of effort, but you know, there's some, you know, effectively holdouts here that we have not been able to assemble. And at a certain point, we just have to proceed with the plan. And we think we have a good plan than what we have here today. And if something changes in the future, obviously the plan might change as well. Zoomed in terms of the scale of the site. 182,000 square feet of land. It's a, you know, significant size. It's in a way what we would call the developed world, it's a mega block now. And some of the planning guidance that Lee will talk a bit about will point us in a direction to kind of break this block down into smaller pieces to give better connectivity and provide what we think is a better sense of scale. Again, just a highlight of how it's comprised. So RHA owns this piece here, and we would be the purchasers of the West Street. Existing conditions is as you come out of the metro, walking towards the West Street Assemblage, you can see the homes that exist here today. And off to the left on the north side, you can see the scale and the height of the buildings that have been developed on the northern side of the Braddock neighborhood. Existing conditions today of RHA housing, and we highlighted this because it's hard to imagine, but you know, the vision that we see is that there's a King Street extension that cuts through the site. We're in the very preliminary stages that we'll get into, but we're trying to figure out, okay, what does that want to be? That's one of the exciting things we see about the site is to how to connect the neighborhood together and actually also phase this project. I think phasing is something that's key. Other images of existing conditions of public housing today. And many of you are already aware of this, but we probably provide some context of, you know, what is in the neighborhood. So when we start, you know, thinking about design, the first thing we do is we get out and we walk the street. We want to see what's there today, you know, see the character of the architecture, see the mix of uses, see connectivity to existing urban open spaces like this trail here, and really get a feel that helps inspire the design team as to what our site could be. More images around the neighborhood. You have some retail, and that's something that we're excited to think about is like what kind of retail wants to go on this site to better connect to the existing retail in the neighborhood. In terms of the neighborhood planning context, I'm going to hand it over to Lee, and he's going to kind of take it from there and help walk us through the design of how we got to where we are.
Good evening. My name is Lee Quill. I'm an architect for Pennington Quill, as you said, and I'm also a resident of Warwick. So I've been around this town for a while, went away for college, etc. It's good to be with you all. Thanks for the committee, advisory group coming together, and thanks for the community. The nice thing is, for those of you who are around, is we have a wonderful foundation to start from. A lot of times you might start from ground zero on a project, but in this particular case, we started with the work that you all had done back in 2008 and 2006. So we started using and looking at the analysis of the site, you know, these two plans right here, with the Braddock Metro Neighborhood Plan and the Braddock East Plan, and it provided an amazing foundation for our work to help develop the proposals in the initial RFP. So what you're seeing is our first kind of diagrammatic studies of the site, but it was based on a lot of work that you all had done, which was really helpful. So we've been building on actual efforts of just trying to find out what is important in the neighborhood, what are your goals, et cetera. We've had other discussions about open space. But this is the foundation of the plan and how it's come together. And this is our block right in this particular area right here. So currently on the site, as Casey said, this is the assemblage of West Street. This is the corner. This is the main site right here. The Braddock Lofts over here. Braddock Place townhouses, the Asher, the other townhouses off of Wythe, and of course the Metro Station. So it's a wonderful site, but it's time to reintegrate this back into the grid. So one thing that we are looking at and have looked at, which is in the plan with you all, is what about extending Payne Street? But instead of just extending Payne Street as another street that is just another grid, which is important for connectivity, what can this street be? What can this street in this area function as part of a new community? This is a terminus for Payne Street coming up, and it stops. This right here, I think it's the top one's a marker, right? I'll use this to make sure. This area right up here is actually a driveway to the townhouses. That's not an extension of the street. So it will stop at Madison. So the idea is, in looking at this area, could we create a central space that could actually help the neighborhood as well as the planning? So in our initial diagrams, which we were putting together with ARHA, and then initial city discussions, right before Christmas with a listening session with the community. There are a couple major ideas I'm going to take you through. We're going to move through them fairly quickly so that you all have time, both on the advisory group as well as in the public, to have questions come to us, because otherwise we'd be here for 2 hours and we want to contribute getting your answers. But this is the extension of Payne Street. We're talking about taking it through, but we're also creating a pedestrian precinct. In other words, this is meant to be a road that can be traveled, but not just asphalt and curb and gutter and then side streets. We're really seeing this as a place that becomes part of a pedestrian area that has a large area over here of areas such as this is a park in Charleston, South Carolina, which is on the river, on the East River there, the Ashley River, the Cooper River, excuse me. And there's an area in this particular park where you can stroll under trees. There are areas where you can sit and come together there. These are images from down there. This image from Bryant Park has the idea of programming space, not unlike the park that came up across, adjacent to the post office there and the Asher. It's a wonderful park. It kind of came up, you know, how part of this program with activity space, et cetera. We're seeing that same opportunity for this being a coming together area. Pavement with the texture very much like Bell Free or something like that. And that this is a very much identified as a service park for Payne Street. The cars can go through, but it's not meant to be a cut through. There are people that are concerned about that. It's also a place that people can come together from different generations, from different economic backgrounds, different housing types, townhouses, apartments, etc., as a central open space. And the investigations that we show here, but in the plan, just down the street down here, in the middle of those blocks going up, there are some open spaces that are meant as parks. They're not parks necessarily now, they're parking spaces. But the intention is to, from earlier discussions, of finding a way to start linking the open space as a connected system. It's not going to be all completely green, in the sense that there's, there are two kind of alley conditions, but there's a park in there. But the idea is to try to help reinforce that. So the main park area is in this area, which brings these different buildings together and then connects through. Right now, we're looking at kind of distributing the housing in different ways in the sense of we're looking at a workforce housing building right here, a market rate building here, an RHA building here, and another market rate perpendicular space right here. There will be visual and physical connections that go through retail and community services on Madison. Again, extended is one of the main walking streets, and this is the other walking street, are meant to be activated. So maybe with a little bit of luck, we can get retail on two sides of Madison at this point, right at Metro. We can start to jumpstart the Bradford side at this point. And then these are kind of examples of some of the additional open spaces. So these are kind of some of the major building blocks of how the plan comes together. Entrances for these buildings are opening onto, again, this central space that brings everyone together. Right now, the proposal is really looking at about 387, as you can see, market rate units. We're looking at 60 RHA units, 6 and 18 workforce housing, and about 17.5 for retail in the buildings along the west and at Madison. So we'll talk more about the distribution and how the units are coming together in the different parcels a little bit later. That's a quick overview.
I'll go back just to a couple of other things. It's hard to beat how Lee presents his design, but one thing that the art team's been especially excited about is this notion of what kind of place this could be on weekends or special occasions. So we've had some very preliminary discussions with the city in terms of public street, private street, who owns this in the long term. But regardless of the ownership of the street, we see this as a place where, what if you could shut the street down on a Saturday and have a farmer's market? What if you could have a screen on the green event on a summer evening where you have residents, public housing building, market rate, workforce, neighbors here all coming together. So this street doesn't exist today, and it's really pretty unique in the development world to have kind of a blank slate as to what it could be. And to us, like, programming is something that you can't see black and white or in color on paper. It's something that we try to bring to the table in terms of the creativity and the long-term plan. It's not just buildings and buildings. It's like creating a program in the long-term that the neighborhood and the community wants to see. So, Lee didn't get these numbers. This is so preliminary. We haven't engineered the units, haven't engaged the engineering. It really is preliminary, but you have to start somewhere and say, okay, if we know this is generally what our buildings want to be, the market rate buildings, some of that's going to be driven by market conditions. Like, if someone asks me how many one bedrooms or three bedrooms you have, we don't know. We'll get into that as we get further. This is kind of a rough cut. Relocation, if Connie were here, she would take these and run with them longer than I have. And Mr. Priest, feel free to interrupt if I miss any to the points that you would like to hit. In terms of the process, there's a lot of words on the page here. To me, like the takeaways, it's about communication, transparency, and educating the residents. And I was at a meeting, Mr. Priest has already had a meeting with existing residents. They were the first ones, really, as we started this engagement process, to understand here's what could be happening. So I believe it's like people are saying, well, when is this going to affect me? And it's like, we just started the pilot process. So there's lots of time to work out the details. The key is we're going to be communicating with them along the way. I think that's essential. In terms of process, there's surveys that are done. That's one of the first things you want to do is understand what do you have, what's the mix of existing residents, where do they want to be, how many folks might come back to this site if there's a temporary relocation. Their return rate has been about 40% of the residents, so the number of residents choose to take their vouchers and move elsewhere, but some do come back, and we hope that the quality of design and the spaces we create it's up to residents, but they want to come back here because of the special place that we designed. Temporary, if you're not familiar, the residents will have the option to move anywhere they choose with a voucher. The plan, the specifics of the plan are something that RHA is working through, and we're going to be helping them think through. We're in the very early stages of understanding how exactly this is going to work. But ultimately, as I use the term, how do you define success? It's like we want to have the residents understand what's happening, have a fluid process, have plenty of time to work through it. We're so related to the design process. And then ultimately, every good plan needs to be able to adapt. Our firm has done a lot of this kind of work in the past, whether it be through military housing residents, and Genius firm has done this with existing public housing residents, and come up with a plan you need to be able to adapt. And then ultimately, this has to be approved through disposition process for clients. The tax credit financing application is essential for our lot to be able to actually go implement its building. And if we step back, the big picture, we need to be able to help facilitate our lot succeeding. Without our lot and their team succeeding, and with their residents, the CRC team, we're just here along to the side. So the our lot buildings take top priority to figure out how that's going to work. In terms of the engagement process, this whiteboard behind the screen, this is an image. Some of you recognize we're at a listening session that we had in December. I thought that was a fun event for us. It was educational for us. This was really like before we're getting really involved in design. For those who are aware, we came here in December right before Christmas, and we had 60 to 70 people turn out. And beyond Mr. Priest setting the tables of who we are and kind of what the purpose is, we just had stations around this room. And a lot of our team members from our team, the police team, the Venus team, we were here to listen and get their thoughts. By the way, I didn't introduce Jay Stewart and Fletcher Epicerby on the CRC team in the back. And they were here taking diligent notes. In addition to just the one-on-one conversations, we had an idea board. And we had a few questions posed to the community because my experience is, some people are naturally more extroverts and vocal and they're going to express their opinions, and some folks would rather, be able to preserve and just write a note down. And so what we wanted to do was capture the ideas. And the type of questions were, what would you like to see in your open spaces, in your green spaces? What kind of retail would you like to see? And that was especially important for us because we're trying to figure out what does the site want to be, what does the neighborhood want to see, what does the market want to be, and then any other ideas. So we started to collect these things, and we did see some common themes. I heard on the retail side, there were folks that wanted a place to get groceries that was more convenient. There were people that wanted food. There were some people that wanted health and fitness. And so that's something that helped inform us as we started thinking about our design. So this was just the first meeting that we had. We have many more meetings in the future. And if you haven't seen it before, the VHD website is a great tool that we use to RHA team uploads presentations and information. Like this presentation tonight will be online shortly for anybody that might have missed the meeting tonight. In terms of a process, We look at this as, in my team, we look at the entire process. It's really about stakeholder engagement. It's about us listening and trying to hopefully build some consensus around where we want to all collectively get to. The first group here, super important, are existing residents that live on site. And so there's already been one meeting, but we continue meetings here to understand what are their needs, what do they want to see in their future development. The redevelopment working group, we had our first meeting with that team last week, starting to get feedback what their concerns may be. This group, and so we're excited. This is really for us, this is the first large public presentation of a plan that Lee just showed you, and we thought it was appropriate given the makeup of the board and the public that this is the right place to start, and we look forward to continuing to engage over time as the plan conforms and changes and moves around. But not to leave out any other city community associations. So except there may be people in the room that are on a HOA board or a different association that would like briefing, we welcome that, and we welcome sharing information and listening. And again, the website, I think, is a great tool to get updates on what's happening. So looking forward, timelines, you know, we had our listening session. So the first folks that heard about where our ideas were, at least the process, were our residents. We thought that was critical. Community listening, and we've already, as you can see, had a number of work sessions with city staff, kind of, you know, getting into the plans, understanding their comments. And here we are, you know, targeting next month to get an update to the plan. We haven't, someone says, hey, can you show me a massing? You're really, we haven't done that yet, because we really just want to hear what's set on where the orientation might be and think about open spaces before we get to that level. So haven't started thinking about the facade we thought about. We don't have any facades to show or massing, but that's where we're really heading. And over the course of this year, there's an iterative process with the city going through a lot of technical comments, but there's opportunities to interact with the BAG and other groups over the course of the year, with again the goal being at the end of this year, hopefully successfully make it through the process with the city so that we can achieve our highest goal of being able to get to the tax credit application. I don't know how they did, what we did on time. I think we actually
were good. We have, it's about 7:33, and we have till 10 o'clock. So we've gone through it fairly quickly to kind of give you an overview of where things go, knowing that there will be and should be a lot of discussion. It's the first, as Casey said, kind of open public meeting, other than the listening session, but this is the one where we've actually been able to show things. So the diagrammatic studies that we have been working on and developing to start to generate feedback and more information. So, just appreciate how you guys.
Can you mention one thing that one of the handouts that was available was the first response that we received from the city related to the concept ones that we submitted to the city. The city provided back 123 comments on that, and so we have again just to work through those, and so we expect to get another 100 comments from you all. So we will be trying to resolve all of those as we move forward and try to finalize the site plan and program for the redevelopment of the Athens.
It would be nice if we could get those comments too, so we didn't repeat the same comments, because I'm sure our members have very similar.
Did you say they're here?
We put our hand out of there.
Okay.
There's
a lot of the regular ones you would expect, and there are some that are specific to those who have submitted before.
Just a couple of sort of definitions of things. What exactly is a workforce?
A workforce unit? There are different strata of affordability in the city, and workforce is really where you're firing the teachers. They're just those who are not hiring them, but they're not in the lower. So somewhere, depending on if you talk to the housing office, workforce can run from 60 to 80 of the average median income for the area. Most of the time it's more closer to 70 to 80, but again, there's a range. But the idea is to provide, the goal of this plan was to provide a number of different layers of housing here. Obviously take care of the residents of Armagh and the real need there. We know about Resolution 830 and it's a replacement, and through all the sites, there is the plan, and so that we have a mix of affordable workforce, affordable RHA units, and we have the market rate at different sizes, which are at different affordability. So the idea is to really create a mix on the site, so we've got a, you know, cross-section of the United States of America in the city.
And matter to ground, just ground the question, so the intent is to develop the whole block except for that southwest corner.
Yes.
Yeah, in terms of a preliminary phasing plan, again, a lot going back to tax credit financing success for RHA, this size of the scale of this building is 60 units, which is kind of a sweet spot in terms of hopefully getting the tax credit. So this would ideally happen at one time. So for construction efficiencies, you know, we're digging one hole, we're putting the underground pumping in, coming out of the ground, Paint Street happens. This is kind of phase one. Question mark, does the workforce happen at the same time or not? You know, to be determined. And for marketability purposes, we want to, you know, get a building, we want to get a building up, stabilize at leases prior to starting another one, so you don't cannibalize your.
So phase one would be complete before phase two started, and maybe we even raise the blocks.
Okay. And from a, you know, for those in the room that are interested in retail, we like that not only as a chief goal of what RHA has, but trying to envision what this is, and you have, you know, more families and people living here, nice new buildings. We think that gives us a better chance at finding quality retail tenants that can kind of see the vision. So when you're starting, you don't have anything. It's like, trust me, it'll be there. We'll be able to show, you know, we've done this. This is the next logical step. You know, do you want to go in this corner? Do you want to go here? Where would you like to go?
Let me just Mr. Hopkins.
All right. I want to come back to your question about distribution of housing. Is there a formula or a mechanism of which that is driven? You've got 387, for example, market rate in the 60s, there one-to-one analysis on RHA. I mean, what's driving that? What will drive that mostly the criteria to determine how the distribution will work?
I'll let Casey speak to this in a second, but in this, instead of, because of the density being closer to metro and the desire for raising that from the city and others, you start looking at a different typology that is from across the street, where you have the townhouse model, and then you go to the corner units and you go in the center, where you have about three or four flats, which look like double townhouses. Here, there's a need for a little bit more density, so the buildings are more like the Group 1 buildings, which are up here along the path of Patrick. He's headed, or to get that next up here. So the idea here was that you take that, and as Casey said, it's also where do you need to be for tax credits? Tax credits play a big role in this. So where you can get your points, where it says that 60 unit building, not bigger, not smaller, is about where that comes out, and then you break it out to get the workforce and, you know, some other small buildings, things like that. So that's what's kind of driving it, particularly on this site. Because there are other sites, the idea is looking at different densities and different configurations of what would happen on those for the distribution of units. So some of the units here, since we're bringing back 60 of the 90, would end up over at Sam Madden, which is over here, and some of the other sites.
So let me just follow up. When you decide on market rate versus a workforce, is there something that guides that? Who's to say now that we have a lesser need, for example, for workforce housing as opposed to market rate? How's that being driven? How's that being determined? Or how will that be determined?
I'll try to answer it. So really, I mean, how do we start from? It was the dialogue with RHA in terms of what is the program scope that they'd like to see. Okay. And so 60 units, and it was the collaboration that drove us towards 18 workforce housing units. Could that be 20? Could it be 10? Could it be 30? I mean, it was like what kind of fits in the context of the site, and keeping the most affordable construction typology to make this tax credit going financeable. This is four stories. We're talking about massive, but this is four stories of a frame construction. this is 3 to 4 stories here. So those are what kind of set things. And then for us, we look at, okay, how does the block want to come together? Again, it's as much about door square footage, and then we'll do a market. We are doing a market study to really understand, you know, it might not be 387 units, it might be 320 units. Like maybe the demand for more larger units in this submarket. So that's, I don't know if that maybe didn't answer your question, but I'm trying to say, like, this was as much guided by where did ARHA want to end up. And then we said, okay, how do we fit in the market rate building to make this, there's a business arrangement for us and ARHA to actually make it work for them as well.
Okay, so, let me add a little to that. And the weather plan also makes this clear as well, that on that site, we have 90 units currently on that site. Mm-hmm. And so, and we have a requirement for 1-for-1 replacement of the house. So what we're trying to look at is what in terms of the economics of how we want to finance the rebuilding of what we build, and how much market rate do we need to have a concept with that. So we don't have a fixed formula, but that's really driven by the market, by the market, what can you put that on that site, and how can we finance it. And so we know that there are certain levels of the number of units that we can compete for successfully in a taxpayer application. It was difficult and challenging to cover the amount of money available. We can spend the taxpayer program to go away with the solution table and put all 9 units right on that site. And we're very difficult for us to compete in that level. And we have found that there's a little sweet spot. That's how we sort of came up in a way that there's 68, 70, and 18, 78 units. Combination, doing that, trying to create a diversity of income choices on the site as well. So again, it's all just very preliminary, just sort of playing around with what can we do, given the 69 exact number at this point.
Well, that's very helpful, just explain. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Judy, for assisting me.
We're running out of time very quick. And we're not
going to tonight or
both. And that's the thing that worries me. I mean, I have an exhaustive list of items, and I think some of the assumptions that are made on the site, our civic association has already discussed and have, we take a different framework for a lot of reasons. I think one of the things that I think I'm hearing is that this plan is being very insular with this block without the plans that are proceeding north of it for Jaguar, across the street for the park, some other things that are going on, and just the notion that we wait on the retail and it goes on Madison, so we put better retail in because there will be more housing units, is a little bit flawed. And I think there's some people here that can speak to that, because we have a huge urgent neighborhood already. Make it sound like there's not enough there to make this go. And I actually think that putting it on Madison is not the best idea. I'm not the only one. So I think there's some fundamental things about looking a little bit more broadly of the context of what's going on, some of the specifics, all the way from the orientation of the lower elevations, integration of the affordable workforce housing into some of the other units, consolidating open space. I'm going to go on and on. We want to challenge some of the basic assumptions. And what I'm hearing is that in February, in a couple of weeks, you're going to go to the second submission, and yet we are not going to have time for a substantive conversation about the changes that could and should come with the substantive, with the next iteration. I would suggest that, you know, our hope was we could have that here tonight. That's not going to happen. So when does it happen? And it should happen very shortly, 2 weeks away, Saturday afternoon, everybody around the table for 3 or 4 hours. That's what needs to happen at this point in time for you to get the information from this set of people to really parse this and make the schedule that is very short. So, you know, if your intent was to hear a lot tonight, we don't have time for that. We're not going to be real quick. So,
well, you're exactly right. I mean, we had to. It is a little bit different process, I would say. We had to generate a diagram as part of the ARHA process, okay? And there are a lot of ideas. What we know exactly, there's no argument with what you had to say. There is a schedule that is set up to try to, if not try to, but get before the end of the year to have a hearing. Well, we have to have sessions with you. And we know this is the first, and this is not to kind of cut things off. So
let's talk after this with the team here, figure out what the process can be for board input, because we know, there's, you know, I mean, we wanted this group to be, to this all-encompassing group to be one of the first that was a large-scale meeting, because there's so many representatives here. We know this is not just a one-off, though. So actually, we need to hear from you, despite the fact that we have all this, it's more diagrammatic, a lot of it, we get a lot of feedback from the city. We need to hear from you. This is your neighborhood. You guys know it even more intimately. I mean, I live a few blocks away, but I don't live here. And
my point is sooner rather than later.
Right. So let's talk. Let's talk after you guys are finished. We'll figure out some times to do that. Sir.
Yes, I thought I heard in the beginning of your comments that you were talking about townhouses. Then when your stats flashed by, it was all in terms of buildings. I think 1, 2, and 3. So I'm a little confused.
Yeah, I said it was.
You correct my thought.
It was not going to be this typology. Exclusively over there. We have an area where we're taking down this area, we're varying the height. Instead of having a straight one level of heights, and this, we've got various heights, we're looking at some townhouse scale elements, but we're not looking at single occupancy townhouses. There isn't all that value.
Well, my second question is, given that these are contiguous large buildings, and you want to integrate retail into this environment, have you studied why Braddock Place basically failed?
I would not say there's been extensive study on that yet. No.
You might want to look at that.
Yeah. Do you have some thoughts on that?
Well, I was a civic association president at a time, and there was pretty straightforward discussions, and retail never quite took off, except for retail of a type. And that was a type that, how do I say, didn't fit the rest of the...
Can we talk to you about your background?
Yeah,
what
I
think
you really do need to look at Braddock Place from an
initiative. Okay. So, yeah, I have a question for you. As far as the preliminary planning, my idea is just the beginning phase of the housing. Housing is always going to be my biggest thing. Making sure that aesthetically everything fits in. I see that you have the units that the affordable is sectioned off, that the market is sectioned and that the mixed workforce development is sectioned off. Will that be how it turns out in the end, where it is, you know, kind of separated? Because the goal for me, ideally, is so that every new development in this area has a really nice breezeway, where the construction is similar, where the amenities are similar, so that the quality of life, the quality of home is similar for all types of residents. So with it being sectioned off in such a way could cause an issue for me. So how would that be addressed? Would it be like, oh, that's the affordable housing apartment building right next to, you know, because that then instead of creating unity in the community, it can change things. So that's something that you guys need to.
Our goal is to snow and that's why we have majors and master architects, so that it's a cohesive design for the whole thing. You're walking on a block and you're like, you don't know who those
are. So would all 60, essentially would all 60 units be placed in one building, or would it be mixed housing where there are some maybe units that are, you know, mixed in with the market rate housing or in the workforce?
Now, this is a big issue we should talk about, because of the way that financing on these bigger buildings, when you have to use the townhouses
right.
are, there will be 60 units in that building that's an RHA building.
Right,
so
right.
There'll be an RHA workforce building also. But the idea, which is to bring the community together while they live in the building, it's not that section at all. We're not putting little fences around it and saying, and we're not designing it separately. So you can say, that's the RHA building. Let's look at this. This is something that you have to always look very simple out here. You're going down the street, unless you really know what you're looking for, you're not going to be able to tell the difference. That's part of what we're going to do here. But we should have more discussions about so you understand the
constraints that... Even the quality of the everything from inside of it.
Yeah,
you know, like there are definitely right. noticeable differences when you go inside of certain units.
Right.
So it just, you know, makes a difference.
This is more of a discussion we should have with everybody about what are the differences in that. So, because we call the time to get this.
So, to
finding out how that has worked at Old Town Commons. So we have our hot buildings on Patrick Street, and we have Market Rate, and I want to know, do they talk to one another? Have the people within the buildings form those bonds? Because it's not just enough for the building to look right when you're driving down the street. That's not what the purpose of this is. And I mean, I have concerns, and I've expressed those since Old Town Commons, of segregating the public housing and the workforce housing away from Market Rate. Horrible idea, and I understand y'all got financing issues to deal with, but I don't think that's the intent of the plan. The other thing I want to ask about is this site is meant for a lot of density and height. You mentioned a four-story building. I think that the height limit on this property is, what, 70? So how are you hitting the 70 mark?
Yeah, the building closest to the metro, these are conditioned to be seven-story.
Well, not right on the edge, across from the townhouse, but in the middle of the block. The plan calls for height in the middle of the block, not if you're living in the townhouse across the street. You know, this is not the backyard where your backyard, you've got the high rise going up. This is terraced into the center. So there is height, but it's working for the plan.
And then my last comment is, I'm sort of astounded that on Ramsey Home site, which is about two-thirds of an acre, what is appropriate for the site was sort of thrown out the window in terms of maximizing the number of units, and you've got 53 units on basically two-thirds of an acre, and we're getting 16 public housing units on what is a site that is probably, what, four or five times that? I mean, if my math is right, it's roughly 15% of the entire development. I'm sort of like...
I lived in Hotel Home, and I do live in one of the units. And I do get along with my neighbors. On Street Avenue, I have three families on that street I live on. And we do get along with our neighbors. Only thing different you can tell us from the homeowners is the doorbell. Other than that, very nice
place. But you live in one of the townhouses, or do you?
Yeah.
So I guess I was more interested in how it's working with the multifamily buildings that are like right on that north part of Patrick Street. Where literally you have one building that is RHOT and another building entirely separate from Market
Rate. I think the way to answer that question, how did you talk to the people that live there? But in terms of, did you try to design those buildings so there was an interface of people moving in and out of those buildings and would in fact meet each other and have a space to do that? We have a park, it's very close. Some of those buildings that are used very well. But in my discussion with people who are living there, they're living together very effectively. We're finding, for example, that there are a younger group of condominium owners than the townhouse owners. And they are more actively engaged in the community in a lot of ways than some of the older homeowners are. So we're finding that to be working pretty well. Again, you can sit down at the main meeting and talk to them and tell you what their experience has been. That's been very good.
I just scanned the city comments really quickly, and I agree with some, but I disagree with others. But piggybacking on what Judy was saying is, not only is it important to get some more detailed comments from this group before it goes to concept two, that can work both ways. Not only, I think, are there some changes that Judy is proposing, and I think a lot of people would agree with, but there are also some things that you're proposing that the city's not supporting that we could give you support on. Specifically, they're saying that metal spine, they're not supporting that via private road, so she waxed so eloquently on how wonderful that could be. If that's gutted from the plan, all of a sudden your spine falls apart. The other thing that I did agree with the city comment is and something Judy suggested as well, is combining some of the open space. And right now you've got the U-shaped building, which is turning its back on the public housing, which is not a good way to integrate the spaces. And if those public spaces are more integrated, then you'll get a better cross-pollination between all the different demographic groups and create a community that I think you want to create.
We still have quite a bit left to go on the agenda, so another question or two, if anybody has one.
Sure, let me ask, the police that these comments are they involved Charlie Lloyd in the site examination for public safety issues?
I think that's probably a question that may be a great answer. I know in most communities, there's an interdepartmental review where people are from all of the different departments.
Maybe
plans that reach concept level and thereafter will be reviewed by police and fire as part of the study.
Did you get input at this stage or earlier, or did you not have it yet? Because I see a lot of open space, but that is, and you know, we had a lot of film posters for him. And is that as well about the fact that some of the design that he contributed something to some of the long sides of it, and courtyards and things like that. So I would think that it's really important to get the police involved and make sure that this project, really, the Barber Great Building or the public housing building or retail are benefiting from their expertise for that. Because they've long said that Atkins has design issues that contribute to the project.
For that, I'd have to turn to the development planner on that. I'm not the one that's actually involved in the review of this project. So I hate to call that.
I had trouble hearing that here. Ryan Grice, planning and zoning. So the police department, we did not receive comments in the last round, but they will be engaged with us throughout the process, and we'll have them take a close look at it and evaluate it based on their standards for sure.
Were they solicited the last
time? Yes, they have a plan.
Okay, well, thank you all very much. I think going forward, they're a person I have concern about not integrating the affordable housing into market rate. And I understand the county financing issues, and I'm not sure exactly how this would be structured. Right now, we just see 190 unit project in Roslyn that was 40% affordable, and the units are scattered throughout the building. So there's really no difference between secondly, I share Sarah's concern regarding retail. They have a little bit of retail. The nice thing for one is vacant retail. So they talked to a retail broker. They asked Gloria or something like that. Yeah, would be okay, well, be helpful. And I think the last thing, this kind of goes what Judy was talking about, was looking, coming back and putting this in the context of everything else that's happening in the area, because it is, there's a ton of stuff going on. And I think, all those being able to address those concerns, I think, could help a lot as you go forward. And because everybody wants this to succeed. It's going to be a great project. It's going to be huge.
There are a number of shoulders that are called for inside, so that's about three to four stories, and this goes up to five and six.
The three to four stories at the sidewalk?
At the edge, right, at the shoulders. We followed the plan with regards to the heights on that. And again, this right here is taller than the center, just like that, so.
Thank you.
So I have no comments on this. I just want to say that I just want to say that personally, anecdotally, I don't have much interaction between the affordable units and not affordable units. So I think I would agree that it would be better if they were more mixed up in set of buildings.
Great. Thank you. Thank you guys. Next thing is update on housing and contributions here.
Approximately 75 to 100 units of housing.
and also to create a rental subsidy program that will help begin to fund units for people at the very lowest income. The housing plan identified that we're short almost 3,600 units for people who make $30,000 or less in our city. And many of these people are people who work in the retail industry, in the hospitality industry. They are our workforce that helps keep this local economy going. So it's really important that they have a place to live, to be near their, near where they work. So I'm really here tonight just to share with you that there is a coalition that has come together called Housing Alexandria. It's made up of business people, it's made up of big communities, it's made up of housing advocates in the city. We have Inova, Alexandria has joined this because it's an important issue for them. So we will be working with city manager, we'll be working with our council to say if we are really committed to improving and increasing affordable housing in the city because it's becoming increasingly unaffordable to live here, that we need to make that a priority in our budget. So thank you for your time, and we will be hearing more from us. If there are any questions, I'm happy. Thank you.
Brief question about
yes.
the definition of affordability in housing. If my math is right, and please correct me, if I make $1 million a year, and based on the definition of 30% of household income being used for housing, in theory, $25,000 per month is what I should be able to afford for affordable housing. That's still the definition of affordable housing. But I don't know anyone in the city of Alexandria of the kind that you just mentioned, those folks that work in our schools, who defend us and safety and all that, that makes $1 million a year, but this definition applies, that's what. How would you find affordable housing?
It's really a federal definition that says that 30% of your income, no matter what that income is, should be allocated to your housing costs. We know that people who make $1 million, we know that people who make $100,000 have choices for housing in our city. Maybe not necessarily on the home ownership side, but certainly in the rental side. So that for people who make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year and for a family of four, there are very few choices within the marketplace for them to afford housing. So there needs to be some sort of public investment. We invest in schools and transportation. We consider housing infrastructure. It's really critical to a healthy community that we have housing choice. So did that answer your
question? Well, that's my point. And you actually made my point.
Okay.
Since then, if we look, I understand the federal mandates and all that,
right.
But I think we can do better in the city of Alexandria with regard to understanding what we mean by affordable housing. And using the numbers I just gave you, affordable housing could theoretically be $1 million a year earned. That's really not what I think we're all interested in. We're interested in folks that think considerably less than that.
Right.
And
right.
What is happening, as you've seen the demographics of Alexandria, the folks that I'm interested in helping, which would be teachers and the average worker,
sure.
is being forced out of the city because that definition is not clear. The median income in this city is going up to a point which south of here and west of here and to some degree east of here is where people being forced to move to because the definition is not clear. So as we look at understanding affordable housing, I think we need to understand what we mean here in the city of Alexandria. And from my perspective, it is housing that is defined for a maximum income. And I know the federal regulations don't set that.
80%.
80% of what?
80% of your area median income is really where federal.
And as that number goes up in the city of Alexandria, that hurdle makes
it. Right.
Yeah, I think maybe if I
can,
sure. So, since the city of Alexandria defines affordable housing as housing that meets the needs of folks who are earning 60% AMI. So, to give you an idea,
okay.
So for a household of one, it's about 45,000, and it goes up to about 65,000 for a household of two. And some of our affordable housing projects are serving folks who are earning 40% AMI. But the city of Alexandria, typically when we talk about affordable housing, we're talking about folks who are earning up to 60% of
right.
the area.
That's right.
That's sort of the number.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you very much.
Great assumption. I'm sure it's mispronounced that. other facility design plan has been filed for final review and should be approved by next month. And this project also involves some utility relocations. I'm working with Green Power to relocate their setting poles on their 41. So they also, they upgraded their design, and it is also at their final review stage to get their approval. So once it's approved, they informed me that it takes a lot of time for construction, so that leads to their relocation work in March. And there was a question about lighting as well, so we did a light study, and the study takes need a fixture break. So I'm working with infrastructure right away division who handles street lights to upgrade street lights as well. Also, there's a potential
internally, and there's always a possibility of using landscape funds if for an increase in caliber.
Figure out how we
if it's a budget thing. I don't know specifically if it's budget or fit or what, but we can figure
okay.
that out.
Let's see if we get larger size trees in there, and if it's a cost issue, then maybe we can help do that.
Yeah, and we've been discussing internally that they'd be going through the standard RPCA Denison contract anyway for the planting, so I don't see how that would present
okay.
anything.
Okay, nice we got. Well, it does. It's a couple of years ago. I mean, you know, if you think about tree rings and how much it takes to get there, it adds a few years. So, do you want to finish your presentation? Or
yeah.
I have one question because Fayette and me are one way. For 2 hours, Monday through Friday.
I can, then perhaps what we can do is we can sit down with the police and discuss just the mechanisms of how they're pulling people over, or see, they actually have reviewed these plans through an impartial review, but we can just bring it up again to see if there was an issue that they raised.
We're not doing the policing, we just want to make sure
right.
it's a safe
right.
process.
Yeah, we don't want them to stop what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, but at the same time, we don't want to create any problems. So I think that that's something that, again, we can
great.
Get all the departments together and talk through and see.
Can we expand that to also look and see if any traffic can be pushed over or detained? Because hot police have the voice cover up there, so children. So as you expand your question out to other blocks.
Yeah. I thought it was just me that almost gets hit every night. So,
yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
Do you
have any more questions? Great, thank you. Right, Nathan, county version?
Right now,
I didn't see any additional copies. But if you all have seen, there is a memo. Is anybody there? Are two left, I guess. Is there any copies of proposal? Okay. Basically, we're going from big to really small. So, can't remember the switches for this, but if you look right through the alley that's from here, the right side of the Watson Reading Room, one of the discussions that we had when staff was looking at the open space of that particular block was whether or not we could actually convert the elements of that alley. There are two parallels, right? So the Watson Reading Room is literally sort of bordered by alleys. So just in reference to the west alley, we looked at whether or not we could convert the ends of those to open space instead of the open space. Through the process, we determined with police and solid waste that we best not to do that to both ends, but we could actually accomplish that. Eventually, that would have to be the west end of that alley. So consideration is done. Fire have no problem with this. Police have no problem with this. Solid waste, they actually took garbage truck to a number of times to make sure that they actually could move around there. And that did lead to some changes in the process, which they could do. It's sort of not reversible. Yeah. They can't really go from this side to that way. They have to go from Pendleton this way. Which again, they don't have a problem with. The garage owners were there and technically said, okay, it looks like it works. But there were still some concerns that were raised about the workability of just that thing now from some of the residents. So, from an engineering perspective, it looks fine and it has been held the sign offs from various city agencies. So, what we wanted to do is just bring it to this body and see if there was any discussion that we could have about. The purpose of it is not necessarily just to turn something grass instead of pavement, but on the Pendleton corner would be our office, publicly accessible open space. So in fact, if we can convert that alley to open space, we can magnify the impact of that open space for the block and the neighborhood. The approach that we're suggesting is that if we move forward with this, we don't start to put equipment and shrubs and trees in the alley the right away, but we would just simply put grass for now so it is reversible if we find that there is a problem moving down the lot. So, with that, I'll just leave it for any discussion.
What were your residents' complaints? Their concerns?
Their concerns were just whether or not trucks would be able to move through without bashing into the walls. We took what's effectively a 35-foot long garbage truck through there, and it was able to maneuver. So, no semi would love to be able to go through those alleys. In fact, they may be able to enter those alleys without creating some serious headaches. So, we thought a 35-foot truck would be a pretty good representation of the larger, say, mall or something of that nature that could actually be put through the alleys.
last item on our agenda, except for questions and next steps. Does anybody have any comments or anything that I can bring up? If not, thank you all.
Well, we should ask the question about whether people want to meet fairly shortly for a half day. Sure.
I think I saw pretty.
I mean, like next Saturday.
Anything else?